There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Thursday and the show on the road today, hanging out with our friends at Fairhope Brewing Company, and a lot to do here today. We're going to do the show, but we're going to hang out and talk some beverages and also talk about what's coming up this very weekend. My buddy Brian Kane from Fairhope Brewing Company having us out here. Thanks for doing that.
Hey, man. Thanks for having this event here. It's great for us.
Let's talk about this. First of all, we were just talking before we went on about the Dueling Banjos brunch. Now,
yes.
Are we going to take? We're going to Appalachia on this, or how are we doing this?
Well, man? we experimented with brunch in October, and we did a jazz brunch of sorts. We had a band in called Swing. We called it Big Band Brunch, actually.
Okay.
So there's only certain kinds of music in the morning you want to hear. Heavy metal brunch might not be the best thing for folks. And we're friends with Andy McDonald, who's the front man for Fat Man Squeeze, writes at Landy App as well. Very talented guy. And I said, if we're putting on Dueling Banjo Brunch, you're my guy.
Yep.
And so he and a buddy of his are going to come out, and he has assured me I'll never want to hear a banjo again after their 3 hours of playing.
So they're gonna be picking banjo as people come out and just enjoy the morning. It starts at what time?
It starts at 10 a.m.
Okay.
So we have a food truck here called 1010's Rock and Roll Food Truck. They come almost every week for our trivia night on Wednesdays. But they have put together a special brunch menu. So it will be, a lot of those kind of interesting breakfast foods.
Right.
Omelets and pancakes and... you have about six selections, I think, on their list that are all really involved, should be really good. Beyond that, we've got the banjos, and then we're releasing our black IPA called Painted Black, which oddly enough goes very well with a little dose of coffee in it. So it's a good...
Very good.
We can turn it into a little bit of a morning beer. We also have some orange juice and some Bloody Mary mix. We got some... our friends at our bistro, so we can doctor up a few of our beers to have some morning drink kind of flavor to them.
Now, I would not imagine doing anything more to y'all's beers. Are pretty perfect, but you're experimenting with doing that as well.
Right. We have we let people pick what they want, but we have a golden ale that went really well with the orange juice, kind of a mimosa-esque drink.
Okay.
And then we have a jalapeno pale ale that we use the Bloody Mary mix with, so it had a good kick to it.
Oh, I like that.
And those were popular. You want to give some people those options that make them feel like they're having that Bloody Mary or mimosa by the pool kind of situation.
You already have a great selection of your mainstays, the beers that we see, whether we're here at the brewery or we're in the stores picking it up. But y'all are, every time I'm in here, it's some new beer that you're also bringing out.
Well, we've got 15 taps available here. About six of them are dedicated to year-rounds. One's dedicated to cider, and then everything else is kind of a flavor of the month, depending on what we're in the mood for, what we want to make sure we have on tap. We have a few beers that we know we're going to have out at a certain time, such as Painted Black's going to come out in the fall, the Rescue Dog Red beer we do in the spring. Beyond that, it's kind of we sit down, decide what we're in the mood for, and we brew it and throw it on tap, and we want to have enough variety that whether you like hoppy beer or dark beer or light beer or you want fruit, whatever it is, we want to please all as best we can.
You mentioned something that you mentioned cider, and like I've had maybe one in my life cider. I liked it okay. I'm a beer fan, but it seems like people are pretty into ciders too.
The cider's it's a gluten free option, which is nice.
Okay,
and we've done a couple. We have a base cider we use. We also do a strawberry lime cider in the summer. We have a cranberry cider on right now. It's got a little tartness to it, so. We try to make it as best we can what you call a craft cider. So it's not going to be super sweet. It's going to be a little drier usually.
Okay.
And so the cranberry cider has gone over very well. Kind of in the fall, people like it. And The strawberry lime one is exactly what you think in the summer. It's a refreshing option.
That's good, and we need the refreshment. All right, folks need to come out here today. We're going to be hanging out. We'll probably hang out beyond the show, but the show will be live from right now through 2 o'clock this afternoon. We have some FM Talk 106.5 goodies. People stomp on by. Can they? You open up the doors?
We open at 1 o'clock today, so we'll be up in about 45, 50 minutes or so, I guess.
Now, I will say this. If somebody can't get out here before 1, if y'all peek through the window and see Dalton or myself or whatever, we can run out some of the FM Talk 106.5 swag we brought with us. But at 1 o'clock, come in here and be part of what's happening here at Fairhope Brewing Company and also with Midday Mobile. We'll check back in with you in just a second.
That sounds great.
All right, thank you, Brian. Hey, coming up, lots to do on today's show. Jeff Poore joins us, John Sharp joins us, and the man who wants to be governor, Walt Maddox, joins us next right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, live from Fairhope Brewing Company today as the show is on the road. Love for y'all to come on by and visit with us today. And we'll talk more to Brian and the crew out here, what they have coming up this fall and even specifically this weekend with their brunch event. As I mentioned just a second ago, going in the news break, joined by Walt Maddox, running for governor of the state of Alabama. Thanks for making some time for us today, Walt.
Hey, Sean, I appreciate you having me.
Hey, you know, as you're on the campaign trail, mayor of Tuscaloosa, and keeping that bus running, obviously, you know, you knew what you were getting into here, maybe, as a busy schedule has to be, all-consuming.
It is. It's the most extraordinary experience of my life, humbling experience of my life, and certainly I do look forward to November 7th because I can't wait to sleep a few hours.
I imagine that is true as you've been canvassing the state as we've been watching this. I want to run through a couple things with you. I thought about this one, and maybe you can help me. As mayor of Tuscaloosa, dealing with ALDOT, because, you know, down here we've got this bridge project. You know, we're kind of interested. I just came over through the tunnels and over to the Eastern Shore today from Mobile County, and already not even on a kind of a nondescript Thursday, there was a lot of traffic. So we're looking forward to trying to get this bridge built down here, but you have some experience dealing with ALDOT as a mayor. What do you have any suggestions? What do you think the situation is if you're elected governor for a bridge down here?
Well, I think it's going to be much more likely than my opponent because a couple of reasons. Number one, and you can actually go to our Twitter feed and see this at Walt Maddox, but one of the things we're going to immediately end is this unconstitutional practice of taking road and bridge money that's currently in the budget and being transferred over to judicial system. So that's going to free up $35 million a year. In addition, if the legislature does that, and I anticipate they would, then we will begin working on an infrastructure plan very similar to the Alliance for Alabama Infrastructure. But my focus is going to be on major projects like the I-10 bridge in Mobile, which is absolutely essential to that region's continued growth and prosperity.
Yeah, you were mentioning the move of the money out of the judicial. But, I mean, the judicial branch, read specific stories and hear from people all the time that they don't have the money they need to operate.
Well, that's part of the problem with state budgeting. It's smoke and mirrors. In fact, the judicial branch generates enough fees to more than operate the system.
But they don't keep those fees, right?
It's robbed from Peter to pay Paul within the general fund. The state's budget woes are constructed in decades, and by the way, Democrats are as guilty as Republicans in doing this, of smoke and mirrors while not addressing the real truth. And the truth is that we haven't funded the general fund at all in such a way that can keep up with the demands of transportation, mental health, corrections, public safety in terms of state troopers.
What about that? You know, people say, well, the money's there, Mayor Maddox, but it's going to the wrong places because of the earmarking. 93% of the general fund is earmarked.
I agree with you on the education trust fund side about the earmarking. I know as a Democrat, people are surprised to hear that. But when you don't have that flexibility, you're forced then to basically eliminate innovation in fiscal austerity. And as a mayor of Tuscaloosa, I'm proud to say that we have one of the lowest debts per capita in the state, fourth lowest. Our city sales tax is 2 cents, and if you compare that, Mobile has 5 cents. So we've been able to do more with less, and that's through a great recession and a tornado that destroyed 12.5% of our city. You know, the flexibility that we have has enabled us to be able to shift needs
or shift resources to the greatest need.
You know, always the discussion is revenue with any, I focus on it here because this is my state, but I know those issues come up elsewhere, but it's always an issue every year, where we're going to get the money, and whether it's through the BP money or federal money, there's been, you know, we found the magic $20 bill in the jacket pocket for a couple sessions in a row, but it looks like that is coming to an end, and maybe that's why the increased discussion for alternate measures here for getting revenue, like the lottery. What's your take on that? I mean, I've heard Speaker McCutcheon say this is coming up in session, no doubt.
Well, I mean, since we announced in October of 2017, we've proposed a lottery that, based off a Republican study done in 2015, would generate $300 million. It would go to a scholarship program very similar to what you see in Tennessee and also to universal pre-K. It's time that I don't think the governor can sit back on this issue. The governor has to be out front and lead the legislature in that direction. Here's the other thing that we want to do as well. Go ahead and tax sports gaming. We now have the ability to do that with the recent Supreme Court decision. Reach a compact with the Ports Creek Indian. That'll generate, those two alone will probably generate above $100 million. We need to place that into our general fund and begin looking at mental health services. You know, down there with what's happened with Cersei and what's happening with your mental health consumers ending up into jails. We want to begin addressing that. We also have less than 300 state troopers on our highways. The city of Tuscaloosa, we're just 100,000, but we have more police officers than we do state troopers. That's unthinkable, and that's happened under the last 8 years. But we're really going to want to use those existing revenues. By the way, there's $500 million, $500 million, that's available through lottery and gaming without raising taxes. That doesn't mean we don't search for efficiencies. We should always be doing that. But at the same time, we can access these revenues, improve our state greatly, and do it without raising taxes. And I do want to say this, Sean, because I think it's important. I saw what happened to Mobile with the BP money, and that was shameful because the people of Mobile and Baldwin counties earned that money through their suffering. We've been through suffering in Tuscaloosa, and as governor, we're never going to take money away from communities who've earned that. And to me, it's unthinkable. And I've been through it myself, and I hate that your region was done that way, but it was done because of poor mismanagement of state budget and governing.
Yeah, I mean, that's what caused the need for the money, but it just, you know, it's also the fact that we are, you know, outnumbered, it seems like, a lot during session for the South Alabama contingent versus other parts of the state. But that's maybe a debate for another day. You mentioned something, this idea of having sports gaming and betting going on in the state, and you mentioned a compact with the Porch Creek. So is that the physical infrastructure of where that would take place? I mean, would it be that it would go to their facilities, or would there be other, because we don't have, you know, Mississippi, they greenlighted, but they already had the Class 3 gaming facilities, put it there.
Yeah, this is where the negotiations will have to be centered around. You know, certainly I can't speak for the Porch Creek, but I would imagine they would want some sort of Class 3 expansion. But I don't think we can give exclusivity, and I think we do have to provide other opportunities where we have existing gaming, like in Greene County, Lowndes County, Houston County, downtown Birmingham, I believe, has a track operation. So, but here's the good news for us is that this is our moment of opportunity, and you've got the state needs the money. I think the Porch Creek certainly see competitors on their horizon, and the existing gaming that you have in Macon County and Greene County and others, they know they've got to upgrade. So this is the moment where leadership can help determine a pathway to access $100 to $150 million without raising taxes.
Okay, so let's say this works. Let's say that lottery happens, and that money goes towards education. And then you take the sports gaming. I know I've heard you talk about Medicaid expansion, paying for that with the sports gaming money. Then let's go to another leg of the stool here, and that is the prison situation. I've been, you know, maybe I'm foolish, but I took it at face value a couple years ago when they said we were facing possible federal receivership of our prisons here in Alabama. How are we going to fund that? How do we change that?
Well, on the Medicaid, let me just say that we have come back and looked at a model that, first of all, Louisiana has paid for their Medicaid expansion through the savings they generated, about $199 million in fiscal 17. What we want to do is treat Medicaid expansion like we do any other job project. we take the 30,000 new jobs that are going to be created, that the payroll taxes and income taxes be used to offset any federal match. So that's going to be our proposal to the legislature. With corrections, you're exactly right. It's actually under Judge Myron Thompson has now put corrections under a court order. And there are going to be tens of millions of dollars of bills due annually. And what we want to do is use those sport gaming dollars as a way to help offset that. Now, here's the thing. This is why I believe debates are important. The governor's not talking about any of these things. But if she's reelected or elected, then these things are going to be coming up, and Alabamians are going to be surprised by it because they've been left in the dark. And so I really appreciate this opportunity that I get to talk to your listeners, because these issues are coming, and they're going to have to be dealt with whoever's governor after November 6th.
Yeah, and, you know, I have a feeling, of course, I've had people talk to me before session and tell me what's going to happen, then it doesn't happen. But generally, those people that have been accurate with me said, hey, obviously the lotto thing, that's out the wide open because of commentary already. But the Medicaid expansion, even though it's not being discussed by many, you have discussed it, obviously, on the campaign trail. But that's going to be a thing that there's going to be, you know, there's going to be a Republican push as much as a Democrat push on that.
I think you're probably right. I don't think the governor will, but you've got just as many hospitals in Republican districts that could close as you do in Democrat districts. In fact, the Alabama Hospital Association, a nonpartisan group, estimates 12 hospitals in Alabama will close about Medicaid expansion.
I've just joining us, talking to Mayor Walt Maddox, running for governor of the state of Alabama. And I want to ask this. You mentioned Governor Ivey a couple times, and I know this last week we've been talking about your questions here over, and I know you say, and I'm going to let you, you know, let me say this, and I'll let you have your peace with it. You said this is about your questions of whether there was cover-up in the situation. But in getting to your point about cover-up, along that trail was a discussion of the age of the governor and the health of the governor. I mean, what was your you knew that had to be part of the message, right? I mean, that is that what's a question here? Is it more about the age and health, or is it more about a cover-up?
It's more about cover-up. The governor's age and the governor's health are irrelevant to me. And the governor says she's healthy. I take her at her word for it. That's why you haven't seen us. I saw in the Republican primary where they wanted health records and letters from doctors. I don't care about any of that stuff. It's not to me, that's not fair to the governor. It's unfounded. But what is fair to ask is, why was a state trooper demoted? And it's shown in payroll records that have been released. Why wasn't the truth disclosed? That you've had two people now, Spencer Collier and his chief of staff, both confirmed the version of events that has been circulated in the media for 2 years now. Remember, it was the misuse of law enforcement that created the whole house of cards for Robert Bentley. We deserve answers to those questions. I don't care about her. I mean, I do care about her health personally. I don't want anyone to be sick, but that's not the issue. What's the issue is the cover-up. And if you notice, the governor hasn't answered those questions or released the documents related to it.
Oh, but I think
that people should be asking.
It seems to me it's frustrating just as a citizen that we can't get to the yes or no, because I hear what you're saying, and many other people have said what you're saying. But at the same time, governor says, in fact, that state trooper was promoted, not demoted. I mean, isn't that as simple as, I mean, can we just put that to bed? I mean, can there be a document that shows that can be printed and shown?
The only document that's been printed was actually from a story done by Josh Moon, and it's the actual payroll record that show his demotion and his reassignment. That's the only thing. Now, he was later promoted in the year, 6 months later, after leaving the detail, but that promotion was done by ALEA Director Collier, according to the payroll records that have been released.
But, I mean, you would think if the governor was wanting to punish them, they could change that at the next time. You know what I'm saying? If you promoted them again, you could do that at that point. I'm confused.
Robert Bentley was still the governor then.
Well, sure. But, I mean, you're tying this, because you're tying this to something that happened, 3 years ago, possibly, right? This question about what happened in Colorado.
Well, to me, lying at any point, at any time, is not acceptable. There is no statute of limitations on that.
We have to see if, you know, that it's shown to be and proven to be a lie. I want to ask you this
Just say one more point on this. Again, the health is irrelevant. But if I'm wrong, or this is actually not me, if Spencer Collier is wrong and his chief of staff is wrong, the governor could release all the documents this afternoon and prove them both wrong.
There you go. It'd be interesting to see on this. I want to ask you this before we run out of time, too, and mm-hmm. this is not specifically an Alabama story, but I think it may obviously reflect on Election Day, just the same way we were talking about the Kavanaugh effect for the last couple weeks, that it seems to have motivated both Democrats and Republicans. I think, just from what I'm seeing, turnout should be higher than expected. But now we have these, and I'm just going to call them pipe bombs. I'm just a hick from South Alabama. I know they're, the other name for them or whatever, but they look like pipe bombs to me until somebody corrects me. Those devices. What do you think that does? Do you have any reflection on that after hearing these stories?
Well, I think, and this is just me, is that everyone's guilty of this hyper-partisanship that exists. Politicians, the media, we've all hyped things up and become so hyper-partisan that both sides are not listening to each other or honoring or respecting each other. And this, you can't blame just the president on this. It's everyone. And what we need to do is take a pause and think about our politics and our discourse. And I hope this is a moment that will allow us to do that on both sides of the aisle.
There we go. Walt Maddox, thank you for your time. Appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Walt Maddox running for governor on with us at Midday Mobile, and we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live from Fairhope Brewing Company. This is cool, man. We need to do this more often. Love to take the show on the road. Good to see my friends over here at Fairhope Brewing Company. They've got all kind of events coming up. First of all, this weekend, the Dueling Banjo Brunch. And that is, that's right, that's banjos, that's brunch, and that is great, great brews here at Fairhope Brewing Company. We'll talk about that more with Brian coming up in just a second. Plus, of course, they've got their specialty beers. Each, you've got the regulars, and then you've got great new flavors. Their Painted Black IPA coming out right now. So we'll talk about that in detail as well. And I also want to check in with Jeff Poor from Lanyap and Breitbart and Yellowhammer News. And I got a slew of things to ask him. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Hey, always a pleasure, man. Okay, let's talk about this. Get right into it. The bomb situation, and to be honest with you, I mean, it's another 5-10 minutes have gone by. There might have been another report of another, I keep calling them pipe bombs, but I know they're called suspicious packages or whatever. I'm calling them pipe bomb delivery. There's the law enforcement side of this. There's finding the perpetrator. And we'll let those forces do what they can on that. At the same time, there's a whole nother side discussion that is straight up political.
Yeah, and I think the idea is to really, I don't know that it does much to the Republican electorate, but I think if you're looking at the equation, you want to look at it on the Democratic side. And does this maybe motivate your base to come out a little bit more with these threats? Because now you could have a Kamala Harris or Cory Booker or whoever say, hey, we need to make sure Democrats are elected so that we can help tone down the rhetoric and get things back in order.
wait a second. Hey, listen, I hope I'm a somewhat fair arbiter of things, and this is not coming off as completely partisan here or something, but Democrats as being the, should we go back and look through the last month and a half, 2 months, 2 years, and see what the rhetoric's been coming from Democrats?
I'm not saying it's a rational and it's not just filled with hypocrisy, but I think that's the idea that the idea is to attack Trump because they want to make Trump out to be the boogeyman, and that's good enough for a Democratic base because it doesn't really matter what the facts are. It's just how it appears, and this will be what can get their base to come out and vote.
Now, what about that? I mean, but, we've been talking about we've been talking about the Kavanaugh effect, right? That was going to be a motivator to get Democrats to come out and vote. And I think it probably was. But at the same time, it motivated a lot of Republicans to come out as well. Does this have does this work two ways, or is this strictly, you would think, in the Democrats' favor? I mean, and then I can play the game, too. I mean, I can confuse the whole thing and say, well, maybe it's motivated by Republicans to make Democrats look one way, or truly it's some, stunt by Democrats to make Republicans look one way. I mean, what does this mean on Election Day?
I don't think you can really motivate Republicans with this, just given to who the targets are. I think the idea... And it is awfully fishy that it's just immediately just all the people that Trump, criticizes at rallies. But to me, it just looks like such a layup for Democrats to make hay out of this. And I you can already tell if you watch the media, that's already kind of happening.
Well, you know, I don't know how many Americans are still in the undecided phase like me. I mean, it seems like, though, there's a bunch at least that are making noise out there one way or another. They're sure that this is a conspiracy drummed up to engender support and sympathy for Democrats before the election. And then there's those out there that, I mean, look, you see it with de Blasio yesterday in his comments at that presser. I mean, here we are, we don't know what the situation is, and de Blasio is going to take time to call out the president, let alone all the talking heads on the cable news network afterwards.
Well, you get Democrats an opportunity to look like they're doing something. They're being proactive. They're getting in front of the camera and they're condemning this by the fullest, language possible. And then on the side of, but it also would help a Trump would kind of back off of what he's doing and come, not land so many blows. So I think in a way that possibly it's a play to marginalize Trump. Maybe that's one of the side effects of this. And, if you watched his rally last night, he didn't throw as many punches. He did go after, some people, but I don't think it was as I'd say caustic as a Trump rally has been in the past.
Well, and you had the president saying, hey, that we're going to wait and get the information here and hope those people are prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. I know that for some on the left, it'll never be enough. But, I mean, right now, I think he is, in an okay place here. He's the tenor is fine. Vice President Pence's tenor, I thought, was great yesterday. That I think that should be what most Americans want to find out is who's behind this. And let's get them stopped before anybody gets hurt. Although people argue these bombs are inert or whatever. I don't know. I'm waiting for the FBI to truly give me the view on that. There's a bunch of people that have all of a sudden become bomb specialists out there, but I'm kind of waiting on the actual bomb specialist.
Well, I'll say this. I think the Democrats could overplay this. That people will look at this, and perhaps Democrats in particular, but I definitely think the media is going to overplay this and over-victimize themselves. And I think in the eyes of people, they'll just roll their eyes. And they're not going to get a lot of sympathy. They already pull pretty low. They pull below the media does, below Congress. So my feeling is the media could overplay this, and it winds up backfiring to some degree.
Yeah, I hate to say this because if somebody would have been hurt, Lord knows. I mean, this is as serious as it gets. But I got to ask this question. How long does – I feel weird asking this. So how long does this last? We see whatever it is, the political hot potato of the day, and then you'll often say – you've been doing this for years. You say, hey, Sean, are we going to be talking about this in 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks? So I'm going to ask Jeff Ford the same question, man. Are we going to be talking about this by November 6th? Is this still the hot subject?
My guess is as long as there's somebody on the loose that they're looking for, we'll be talking about it. Until they identify a suspect – and that's not clear that they're going to be able to do that in time for the election. But I think it kind of drags on a little bit. And probably one of the things that's going to come out of this is we're not going to be paying as much attention to this migrant caravan that's allegedly working its way to the U.S.-Mexico border.
I mean, it seems sad. I think you're right. I'm not disagreeing with you, but it's to sit back and, look at we the people, all of us, and I'm including me as part of it, that, here was the one thing that we're focused on so much, and now we completely forget about it to chase the next tennis ball,
Yeah, I mean, that's just the nature of the news cycle right now. 20, 30 years ago, you didn't have all these bouncing balls and all these channels and all these outlets and all these websites. I think now you've got to be able to multitask in a news cycle if you're in the political world.
All right. I want to, I guess the next part will be, like you said, seeing if somebody is arrested and where that leads. And I don't know if that, happens in time. It feels so weird saying it because, I mean, we're talking about real serious things here, but happens in time for November, November 6th for Election Day. Does it? Do you have somebody? You have somebody arrested, and then they're linked, politically X, Y, or Z, and then all the dust settles, and then people go to the polls, and how that bears out.
Yeah. Well, what happens if this is a hoax? If this is some Democratic sympathizer? I think it has a real, it could backfire on Democrats and just fire up the right even more and say, hey, look, we told you so. This is what we said all along. On the other hand, if it is a Republican kind of freelancing out there and is really upset, I don't know. I mean, I think it does kind of benefit Democrats because it's faster Republicans. You know, they could suddenly tag this, whoever this individual is, to the Republican Party as a whole. But we may already be at that point at this point in time, just given the way the media is portraying it and, you know, some of the reaction you're hearing from a lot of the politicians on the left side of the aisle.
All right, we're coming right back. More with Jeff Boer with Breitbart and Lanyap, Yellowhammer News. We'll talk a little bit more about this issue and take a look at some state politics, help him review the conversation we just had with Walt Maddox as well. When we come back, more of Midday Mobile. We are live at Fairhope Brewing Company. Come see us.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, live in Fairhope. How about that? Fairhope Brewing Company today, and doors open up here at 1, so stop on by. We've been handing out goodies to people who came by before out the front door, but now we can do it in person. So we got the new run of FM Talk 106.5 Huggers. Also, Auburn fans, we got your Auburn Huggers as well. And I'll tell you what, the next person walks on in here and says, hey, I heard you talk about the Old Mobile Trivia book, a copy of that. It's really a cool coffee table book, but like there's some coffee table books that sit there and they, you know, when you pick them up at somebody's house and you hear, when you open them up, you can tell you're the first person that's ever opened it up. It's really there just about the cover. This is a coffee table book that people are going to open up every time in your house because it's all kind of trivia about the city of Mobile with the, you know, questions and answers in there. Really great book by Malcolm Steiner. And the next person walk on in here to Fairhope Brewing Company said, hey, I just heard you talking about it. We'll hook you up with that book, so come on by. Also, continue our conversation with Jeff Poor, with Lanyap and Breitbart and Yellowhammer News, and we're talking some national politics, but also talking about the gubernatorial cycle. So I just got off the phone with Walt Maddox just before the bottom of the hour news, and I you know, went through a couple things here, from Medicaid expansion to the lottery to sports gambling, but then we kind of got back into the governor thing. And I've been saying for the last week and a half, it sure sounds like the whole question about whether there's a cover-up or not is a good excuse to talk about health and age. He said in fact it wasn't. He said the governor's age and the governor's health are irrelevant to me. Jeff, I don't know, I mean, you buy that?
I mean, I actually listened to the interview, and my initial impression was he sounds a little like a Republican, doesn't he? But
yeah,
especially when
which would be a smart thing for a Democrat to run as.
But on the health question, you know, he can say that. I think he has cover to say that, but you cannot say that that's not going to come up, and that wasn't the intended purpose by maybe not him, but certainly his consultants, I think.
Right. Well, okay. That's just a nuance thing. You can do that. Hey, I didn't say the thing. The other person said the thing. I would never say the thing. Yeah, but if you don't denounce something, or if you don't denounce a person that said it, wait, listen, we deal with this in politics all the time. And if you don't, I mean, then I think you're culpable, right?
Yeah, I think he's trying to make it out to be a cover-up story. But as these things go, it's the same thing I would liken to Bill Clinton and the impeachment thing. Well, it was all about the perjury, or it wasn't about the sex, right? Or with Nixon, it was right about the cover-up. It wasn't about the break-in at Watergate. But people don't really think that way. They look at the big picture. They look at the break-in. They look at the sex in the Oval Office. They look at these things. And that's what they think is on trial, or, you know, the court of public opinion. But we're, you know, meanwhile, we're being told, well, no, it's not really that. We're really actually talking about the cover-up and Spencer Collier and all the things that dealt with that state trooper that was, you know, protected, that was on protection detail for the lieutenant governor then.
Yeah, what is the story? I mean, I'm trying to get down to one or the other here on this. I mean, is it that hard to find? I guess it is because of closed records or whatever. Is that hard to find out if that was the attached state trooper, or that state trooper was demoted and cut in salary or not? I mean, can we not get that information?
Well, what I think we're talking about is when you're assigned to that detail, you're given a certain stipend, you're given a certain bonus, right? And I guess Ivy at some point said, I don't like the state trooper. for whatever the reason is, be it, you know, that he knew too much or that she just did not like him and asked for him to be moved. So when you get moved, and my understanding was a DMV office in Dothan or in Houston County somewhere, that you lose that stipend. So I guess in substance, it may be a lateral move on the books, but you don't get the bonus, so you get the you lose the extra pay or whatever. But you know, it's my understanding that after that, he was promoted and given a bigger job, a better job with higher pay. Hi, Aaliyah. So, you know, I think we're kind of getting a little too into the weeds. Yeah, at face value, this may be true, what happened. But I don't think that it's, you know, if you're going by the textbook, that it's fully a thing that he actually got demoted. It's just the appearance of that.
Well, and that's what that's why I would love to have some kind of linkage, because I mean, there's a lot of spurious correlations you can make in life, right? You can say, well, this thing happened and this thing also happened at the same time. That does not mean they're linked. Maybe it does, but I think these things come out, like you've always taught us here, they're going to come out very close to election, because there's not enough time to get concrete answers to any of these things by the time people go to the polls.
Well, and I think that there is a story here to be told. But I think that maybe it's just my suspicion. I got this hunch that maybe the Maddox campaign is just taking that extra little step and really framing it in a way that it's attempting to make the governor look bad. And I don't necessarily think that's the best tactic, and I don't think it's going to make Walt Maddox next governor of Alabama. But just kind of like looking at how these things work, and we know how government works. I mean, you get a job in government, it's really hard to do certain things, especially a demotion, particularly a demotion, just the way statutes are written and things are done. So I think maybe they're taking some liberties with this to make it seem like it's a lot worse than it really is.
There he is, Jeff Poore with Breitbart, Atlantic, and Yellowhammer News. People want to reach out to you. Where do they go?
It's twitter.com/Jeff_Poore.
And let's talk about this, y'all. So coming up next week, I'm going to be there for about half the week next week, and then I'm out. And this man right here, Jeff Poore, is going to be hosting this very show, Midday Mobile. So best of luck. Break a leg with that.
All right, man. Thanks for having me on again.
As always, a pleasure. Jeff Poore, thank you, man. And speaking of things coming up next week, too, we talked about it this morning. And I know it's up on our social media platforms, but 8 o'clock on Tuesday morning, 8 o'clock, Congressman Bradley Byrne, AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, and Robert Kennedy Jr. will be in studio for a debate. And and I go through the semantics of what's a meet and greet, what's a forum, this is a debate. The two will be in studio, and we'll be asking y'all's questions. So as you text in, you text to the text line at 343-0106, or you email us. I would say, Trish, if you can, I saw some people put them on Facebook. That's a little harder to keep up with. It's easier for us if you email Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com, or Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N, at fmtalk1065.com. Or you can send them to Kelly as well. Any of us, send us your email questions or go to our text line, same as the call-in number, 343-0106. Give us your question for the two congressional candidates, Byrne and Kennedy. And then, give yourself, you can put your first and last name if you want to. If you just want to put your first name in, that's fine. But also tell us, if you live in Mobile, or if you live in Fairhope, or you live in Citronelle, or you live in Gulf Shores, or you live in Bay Minette, or, or you live in Jackson, wherever. Put that there so we can have that with the question as we ask it. But Tuesday, starting at 8 in the morning, so the last hour, the third hour of Mobile Mornings on Tuesday, a debate with Congressman Bradley Byrne and challenger Robert Kennedy Jr. So make sure you're tuned in for that. All right. And speaking of political action, this afternoon, Bayside, 5:30, Eastern Shore Chamber of Commerce has your chance to come out and hear from the candidates. That's happening 5:30 this afternoon at Bayside. We'll give you more details. I'll be out there for that event, and we'll come back. We'll run through the list of people you'll be able to hear from tonight. Plus, next hour, John Sharp's going to join us. Lots to talk about. Since we're here in Fairhope, let's talk some Fairhope city politics. How about that?